Fragile cell structure. Wait a minute, said the doctor. Ticking as it cools down? I don't think so. He unsealed a gigantic rear panel on the robot's torso. Jovic and Padova helped him shove the panel off until it slid over the side and scythed its way down into the dark pit of the cathedral. Jovic saw his reaction. Not good? Even worse, shouted the doctor. The Sharback's fatally damaged. Its self-destruct has activated, and it's got a great big tank full of hypergolic fuel. He scrambled up. No time to defuse it. Gotta get out of here. Padova craned his neck to see how far down they had fallen. The surface looked impossibly distant. I can't climb that far. Not in these shoes. He waggled his forelimbs to show the metal under his hooves. Before the doctor could comment, Lieutenant Jovic had moved briskly to the Aquabi's side. Come on, that mudslide will offer some traction. And you've got six sound limbs there, soldier. Use your legs to push, those strong arms of yours to pull. Doctor, you and I will assist from either flank. The doctor grinned in admiration. Yes, sir! They made painfully slow progress up a skewed slide of fallen dirt that led to the surface. A handful of Surfian drones flitted past them. Padova struggled ahead as the doctor and Jovic shoved. It seemed the further they got, the louder the Sharback's ticking became. They approached the edge. Humans and Aquabi peered over the lip at them. Many hands reached down to assist, and with a final heave, they were all able to scramble onto the surface. Sergeant Chaka was in the group who had pulled them out. Order, sir, he asked. Run, bellowed the doctor and Jovic together. The Aquabi warriors reared and galloped away, the human soldiers hard after them. The crowd had barely reached the fringes of the mobile hospital before a thunderclap cracked through the air. A massive gout of flame roared into the early evening sky. It was a volcano blast of fire and debris shooting straight up out of the hole and instantly incinerating a cloud of Surfians as they rose from the pit. The heat washed over the doctor. He could feel it crisping the ends of his spiky hair. The ground beneath them bucked and heaved. The earthquake rippled on into the hospital grounds, rattling metal buildings like charity collection tins, overtoppling a tall-sided vehicle, snapping the three-pointed communications mast like straw. Mud and topsoil began to rain down in a choking cloud. A handful of Surfian drones with frazzled wings were crawling away from the devastation. The doctor wanted to call out a warning, but could hardly speak for coughing and spluttering. Commander Padova slapped him on the back. Are you all right, doctor? I'm a little hoarse, croaked the doctor. He looked apologetically at the centaur. I know the feeling, grinned Padova. Jovic couldn't help laughing with them. The doctor cleared his throat. You two need to coordinate your remaining forces to track down those escaping Surfian drones. You don't have to be like the Sharback, blindly following its programming even beyond the extinction of its own race. You both know you can work together now. The two commanders nodded. What about you, Doctor? Asked Jovic. The doctor stared towards the medical centre. I need to work on an antidote for Lenova's inoculation, otherwise your soldiers aren't going to stay your soldiers for much longer, Lieutenant. And I need to find Donna. The carpet tasted awful. Donna gagged and surreptitiously wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Should she pretend she was still unconscious?
Back with us, are you?
Asked Lenova's voice. No, decided Donna. She'd been rumbled. The whole building had been rumbling only a couple of minutes ago. It was some kind of earthquake, that's what had woken Donna. Someone had already dragged her against a side wall, so when more of the shattered ceiling had tumbled into the room, she had been unscathed. The sickly, sweet smell of the office was tinged with something new. It was an awful barbecue kind of pong. When she leaned up against the wall, she realised with a thrill of pure horror where the stink came from. It was Lenova. Her arms and torso were still recognisably a person, though her fat jowls quivered with pain and anger. But the human half sat incongruously above the greasy, slug-like foot. The rear of that repugnant lower body was burnt and smouldering. The surgeon had finally moved away from behind her desk. Where she had sat earlier was now a rough pile of toppled filing cabinets and charred carpet. There had been a fire in the hole, and Lenova had been injured. Her insect slaves made a desultory attempt to tidy the room. Housemaids they weren't. In the end, Lenova waved them away irritably.
"Made a right mess of this place," Donna mumbled. "Can't get it staffed these days, can you?"
Lenova slid across the room with a dreadful squelching noise. She grabbed a handful of Donna's hair and gave it a brutal tug.
"Many of my sons and daughters have died today," she spat.
Donna tried not to show how petrified she felt. "Lots of humans died to become your sons and daughters." She twisted out of Lenova's grip and attempted to locate Miriam. "One of them was my friend."
"No matter," replied Lenova. "We are few. But the ancient enemy is dead now. Soon we will be many again. The Seraphians will survive."
Donna staggered to her feet and considered her options for escape. Lenova had anticipated this and gestured her Seraphian drones to block the exit. In her other hand, the surgeon brandished a weapon.
"Don't try to run," warned Lenova. "I'll just shoot you. To wound, not to kill."
Donna snorted with disgust. "What do you want to do? Eat me?"
"Tempting," laughed Lenova.
"I hope you choke," blurted Donna. This made Lenova laugh all the more.
"I need as many human hosts as I can find. And you, Donna Noble, have swallowed the medication, haven't you? Not as much as the other soldiers, but..."
The slug-like monstrosity sniffed the air, pushing her fat lips and heavy jowls close to Donna's face.
"I can detect it. You're nursing a Seraphian right now. Can't you feel it? Growing inside you."
Fear shrank Donna's stomach. She thought she might be sick.
"Soon," crooned Lenova. "So soon."
"Sorry I couldn't get here sooner," cried a familiar voice, and the doctor burst in through the main office door, brandishing the sonic screwdriver. He clattered to a halt in the debris of the smashed room. Donna's heart leapt in her chest and she punched the air. "Doctor!" she yelled. Her delight was short-lived, though. The Seraphians guarding the door soon recovered their wits. Two grappled the doctor from either side, while a third dropped onto him from its perch in the broken ceiling. Surgeon Lenova slimed her way over to the intruder. She brandished a wicked-looking hypodermic.
"Very timely, Doctor. I can inoculate you, too, while you're here. I think an injected dose, rather than orally. Don't you?"
She tugged the doctor's sleeve up his arm. Donna's hopes were crushed. She slid down the wall, aghast.
"I don't want to be creepy crawly."
Surgeon Lenova paused, her hypodermic hovering.
"You humans are weak."
"Oh, you humans, is it now?" said the doctor.
"The woman fears the inevitable,"
continued Lenova.
"She has no courage. She could not kill on the field of battle, I know that much, from her friend Miriam."
Surgeon Lenova indicated the Seraphian nearest to her, one of the two who had pinioned the doctor.
"Donna will be like Miriam soon enough. Then she'll be able to kill, like any good Seraphian."
"She'll be a mindless drone," snapped the doctor. "And that's a good thing, is it, Surgeon Lenova?" His gaze bored into her sunken eyes as he quoted, "Remember that there is art to medicine as well as science, and that warmth, sympathy and understanding may outweigh the surgeon's knife or the chemist's drug."
"The Hippocratic Oath," spat Lenova. "How human."
Donna looked in pity at Lenova.
"There's less human in you than in any of these poor creatures."
She peered despondently at the Seraphian that had been Miriam. The Seraphian gazed back, its mandibles clicking as it cocked its head.
"There are other kinds of bravery than being able to kill," continued Donna. "Miriam told me that, like bringing her back to the hospital when all I wanted to do was run away and find the doctor, or staying with her on the front line. I'd do it all again." And if you were still Miriam, I'll tell you that to your face.
Oh, do shut up, snapped Lenova.
You're the one going on about courage, snarled Donna, so there's no need to bite me head off.
I can't listen to this anymore, groaned Lenova.
She rapped on the Surfian's hard exoskeleton and pointed at Donna.
Take it away until she hatches out.
The drone twisted its head in a quizzical gesture, but it did not approach Donna. So Donna rose and walked over to the Surfian instead. She could see her own face reflected over and over in its multifaceted eyes.
Maybe you can remember, Miriam. Is there anything left of you in there?
Take it away!
Screeched Lenova and rapped against the insect's carapace again.
The Surfian that had once been Miriam released the doctor's arm, then swiveled around to confront her tormentor. Lenova struggled with her handgun and placed it against the insect's exoskeleton, but she barely had time to gurgle a cry of protest before Miriam clacked her insect mandibles together and bit the surgeon's head clean off her shoulders. It bounced once on the carpet and rolled under the table.
What remained of Lenova's body spasmed and the fingers tightened on the trigger. A shot blasted into the soft underside of Miriam's thorax. The dead bodies of the insect and the human slug hybrid collapsed in a heap together. The rest of the leaderless drones began to stagger around the room, half jumping, half flying, like bugs trapped behind window glass. The doctor seized Donna's hand, ready to flee from the room. Donna made him wait while she removed her army tunic and reverently covered Miriam's insect body. The doctor nodded approvingly.
You continue to amaze me, Donna Noble.
He took her hand and led her out of the shattered office. Commander Padova's Centaurs brought the TARDIS to the Van Nuys Mobile Hospital. The doctor ferried samples backwards and forwards from the hospital facilities, swiftly concocting an antidote to the Surfian infection. Commander Padova and Lieutenant Jovich watched him in bemusement. Eventually, he burst through the TARDIS doors with a big grin and two large pots of coloured antidote. He waggled them at the soldiers. Here you go, he said. 1 5-milliliter spoonful before meals. May cause drowsiness. Do not attempt to operate heavy machinery.
You serious? Donna asked him.
Well, if I say that, maybe they'll lay off the military equipment for a bit, he muttered at her.
Doctor's orders.
We can hear you, Doctor, laughed Jovich.
He had just returned from supervising a clean-up of the damaged hospital. The doctor watched a group of human and Iquabi soldiers work together. Sergeant Chaco had rolled up his sleeves and his brawny arms tugged at a chain as he assisted a centaur with repairs to the mobile hospital.
I'm impressed, admitted the doctor.
You found a way to cooperate. Looks like you're saddled with each other now.
Yeah, grinned Jovich. We can start rebuilding Recension instead of tearing it apart.
High above, a couple of Surfian insects flitted past, silhouetted in the twilight sky.
What about them? Padova asked. Won't we need heavy machinery to shoot them down?
Nah, the doctor told him. With all the queens destroyed in the fire and Lenova dead too, those insects are just mindless drones.
They might give you a nasty nip if you upset them, I suppose. You wouldn't want them at your picnic. Just leave them alone and keep the lid on your jam jar.
I suppose they'd be hard to squish, agreed Lieutenant Jovich, because of those chitinous exoskeletons.
Well, where are you going to get a newspaper big enough to swap them, agreed the doctor. And I think you'll find it's pronounced chitinous.
Donna tugged at his sleeve.
When it gets like this, I know it's time we were going.
The doctor handed the flasks of antidote to Jovich before he and Donna slipped into the TARDIS. Once inside, Donna leaned heavily against the door.
At last,
she heaved a huge sigh and peered with distaste at the remains of her grubby soldier's uniform.
Time for that long, warm bath.
The doctor was already hurling himself around the TARDIS controls, whirling his arms. Hey, we could go to the lost baths of Brenger Denignab, where the waters are naturally soapy because...
No, said Donna firmly. Long soak, quiet room.
The doctor paused in mid-whirl. Not very adventurous? I thought I amazed you.
It can wear off, admitted the doctor.
He pulled a stoppered test tube from the breast pocket of his jacket and handed it to her.
Saved you some medicine. Enjoy your soak.
She examined the test tube. Doctor, the Seraphian that killed Lenova, what did make it turn on its queen?
You must have touched whatever was left of Miriam,
replied the doctor, activating the TARDIS controls. You reached something beyond that hard, chitinous exterior.
I suppose that's further proof that it's not how you appear to others, but what's inside you that matters.
Donna took a swig of antidote from the test tube.
Don't remind me, she said as she left the room, dreaming of soap suds.
Doctor Who, Pest Control, by Peter Angelidis, was read by David Tennant. It was produced by Kate Thomas and is published by BBC Audiobooks.
Although she had made several voyages aboard the TARDIS, Donna Noble was still surprised that travel through time and space involved so much wheezing, moaning, juddering and vibrating. As the deck pitched and yawed, Donna white-knuckled her grip on a convenient handrail and watched as the doctor hunched over the heaving console, adjusting this, switching that, fine-tuning the other, and very occasionally hitting something significant with a mallet. The doctor threw a few more levers, took a look at the asthmatic time rotor, and then shot Donna a slightly manic grin. Eddie, he said. Donna, she replied, very precisely. Eddie, he repeated. Who is? Time, Eddie, the doctor said, causing a little turbulence. We'll be through it in a sec. The TARDIS lurched brutally. You were saying? Donna asked. Okay, maybe more than a second, the doctor admitted. We just have to... What? She demanded. We just have to what? The doctor didn't reply. He was too busy pumping at a stirrup lever as if he was trying to inflate a bouncy castle by hand. He checked a gauge and then flicked its glass face with his fingers. Come on, he cried. Behave! The console uttered a slightly petulant moan that Donna had not previously known to be part of its vocabulary. The doctor bared his teeth, snatched a socket wrench out of a nearby tool belt and dropped to the deck. He pulled himself under the console on his back. Donna heard the wrench clacking. The TARDIS continued to crest and plunge. She held on tight to the rail.
You know, life sure can be a bumpy ride sometimes, announced the man who was suddenly standing beside her.
Donna blinked.
Where the hell did you come from?
Doctor Who, The Forever Trap, by Dan Abnett, read by Catherine Tate. The man grinned a thousand-watt grin. He was tall, good-looking and smartly dressed. Under other circumstances, Donna might have considered him rather handsome, but these were not other circumstances. The man was haloed in soft golden light, as if he had been artfully and individually spotlit. Despite the lurch and roll of the TARDIS, he seemed to have no difficulty standing upright without holding on.
I asked you a question, Donna said. A bumpy, bumpy ride, am I right? The man asked, taking a step towards her and increasing the width of his smile. Sometimes all we want is a place of our own. Somewhere peaceful, somewhere calm, somewhere modern, desirable and well-appointed, where we can kick back, take a weight off, and escape the ups and downs of life's journey. Who? Demanded Donna with an emphatic sideways twitch of her head. The hell are you? And where did you come from? You can't just come in here. I know that. I did it once and he told me it was impossible. What's that? The doctor called out from under the console. Did you say something? Doctor! Donna growled, not taking her eyes off the smiling man. You'd better get out here now. What did you say? The doctor replied, his voice muffled.
The edifice, the man said. His voice was dark velvet and double mocker.
The last time Donna had heard a voice so rich, it had been announcing,
in a world of fire and ice,
during a multiplex trailer.
The edifice is the most modern, most desirable, and most well-appointed structure of its kind currently in existence, he continued.
As he enumerated the details, the man raised one, two, three manicured fingers in turn.
And this time-space location is your lucky time-space location, Donna Noble, he continued. We're offering an exclusive lifestyle investment opportunity to a select few of our most privileged customers. But hurry, this offer is open for a limited time only.
Hey, how come you know my name? Donna squeaked. Are you trying to sell me something? Is that what you're doing? Are you honestly trying to sell me something? Hello? I'm traveling in time. What? The doctor called out from below. I can't hear you. Get out here now, Donna roared.
The TARDIS shook wildly again. The man produced a glossy brochure out of thin air and held it out to her. The brochure had a golden halo too. Donna held up her hand sharply.
I'm not touching anything, she told the man. Now I suggest you sling your flaming hook.
No obligation, the man beamed. Let me talk you through the luxurious features.
You're not talking me through anything, Donna cried. Doctor!
The doctor popped up from under the console with an exasperated look on his face.
Little busy at the moment, Donna, and...
He froze. He stared at the man, his eyes widening.
No, no, he said, jumping to his feet. No, 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 he added as he moved around the console, pointing to the man. Not in here, not in here, you don't. Go on, go, out, shoot, now! Life sure can be a bumpy ride sometimes, said the man, turning to smile at the doctor and proffer the brochure.
The doctor winced a pained expression.
Ooh, you're going to be hard to get rid of, aren't you?
He said, scratching his head furiously.
The TARDIS has filters, but you're one of those new types, aren't you? Newfangled, smart.
Let me talk you through the luxurious features, the man offered.
The doctor ignored him. Teeth gritted, he began to throw switches on the console.
What is he? Donna cried.
He's not a he, he's an it, the doctor replied, working frantically. He's a... You know what spam mail is?
Yes.
He's like a sentient spam mail, a viral transmission.
He's trying to sell me something, Donna said.
Oh, more than sell you something, Donna, the doctor replied.
This is hyper-aggressive marketing. This is super spam, bio-calibrated, totally random, utterly pernicious. The TARDIS has standard filters to block this kind of stuff, but the technology is getting sneakier all the time.
He looked up at Donna sharply.
You didn't sign anything, did you?
No,
she replied, offended at the suggestion.
Good.
The doctor turned his attention back to the console.
I've just got to identify the precise viral meme and shut off his feed, he said. The edifice is the most modern, most desirable, and most well-appointed structure of its kind currently in existence, the man told the doctor, holding up his fingers again. One, two, three.
I'm sure it's dandy, but I'm not interested, the doctor replied, too busy adjusting a series of dials to meet the man's gaze.
Oh, come on, he exclaimed, reaching for the mallet.
The man aimed his 1,000-watt smile back towards Donna. He held the brochure out to her.
Sometimes all we want is a place of our own, somewhere peaceful, somewhere calm, somewhere modern, desirable and well-appointed, where we can kick back, take a weight off,
and escape the ups and downs of life's journey.
Are you deaf or something? She shouted back at him. Are you stupid? We're not interested in your hard sell.
The TARDIS tipped violently as it bounced off another curve of the time eddy. Donna lost her grip and shot her hands out to brace herself against the edge of the console. The fingertips of her right hand brushed the brochure ever so slightly. They grazed the golden light.
Congratulations, the man said, and vanished.
The doctor glared across the console at Donna.
What did you do? He asked.
Nothing, she insisted. I swear I didn't do anything.
Her voice trailed off. The pitching and yawing had suddenly stopped. The TARDIS was moving with perfect calm stability.
You fixed it, then? She asked.
I didn't fix anything, the doctor began to say.
Donna's granddad had once owned an old television set. As a little girl, Donna had been allowed to watch Play School in Jackanory on it. When the set was turned off, the picture would wobble and then shrink to a little white dot in the middle of the blue-black screen. Then the little white dot would vanish into nothingness. That had always scared the young Donna a little bit. It was therefore with some alarm that Donna realized that the same thing was happening to her and the world around her. The TARDIS was cold and silent. Its systems were dead, its time rotor frozen mid-shrug.
What just happened? Donna asked.
The doctor opened his mouth to reply and then closed it again. He looked at the dormant console for a moment, then he pulled his coat off a rail and strode towards the doors.
Doctor, she called, hurrying after him. We've landed, he replied, throwing the doors open. He recoiled. Inside a...
Through the doors, the exit was blocked by a smooth, blank wall.
Inside something, he said.
Donna squinted at the wall outside the doors.
That's plywood.
It's not plywood, said the doctor confidently.
Plywood? Of course it's not. It's a barrier of some type.
It looks like plywood, she said.
Plywood backing.
The doctor shook his sonic screwdriver out of his pocket.
Well, Zarshun Unifabric looks a lot like MDF, but that doesn't mean you want to go meddling with it, he said, beaming the screwdriver at the wall. See? Solid. Inert barrier. No energy sources, no mechanical systems.
Like plywood? She asked.
He ignored her. He pressed his hand against the wall and pushed.
It won't budge, he said.
May I?
She asked.
Be my guest, he said.
Donna put her palms against the wall and applied a sideways pressure. The wall slid aside on soft runners. She glanced at the doctor and cocked an eyebrow. They were looking into a bedroom. A rather nice bedroom, with a fresh fawn carpet, a double bed made up with crisp white Egyptian cotton, and magnolia walls. They stepped out and looked back. The TARDIS was parked inside a built-in wardrobe space, half hidden by the floor-length mirrored door that Donna had slid open.
Walk-in wardrobe, said Donna. Mirror doors.
She leant in and tapped the back of the sliding door.
Plywood backing.
Well, said the doctor, shrugging, if you're going to get all technical.
Donna ignored him and looked around. It's quite nice, isn't it? A little bit Kelly Hoppen, don't you think? That's an attractive durry.
Hmm,
said the doctor. He walked towards the bedroom door and stopped.
How do you know so much about the insides of built-in wardrobes? He asked, turning to look at her.
She shivered.
I was once trapped inside one for a whole afternoon.
Honestly, he wasn't worth it, she said.
Really?
The doctor asked, coming back over to her, frowning intently.
Really?
Oh, please, Donna scoffed. As if.
But if you must know, I was a Saturday girl at MFI years ago. The things I know about track lighting and vanity units, she said.
The doctor grinned.
Donna Noble, Saturday girl.
All right, ha-ha, I had my own smock and name badge. Let's leave it there, shall we? I presume we haven't landed in an MFI showroom.
The doctor took a deep breath and shook his head.
No, he replied, no, we haven't.
So?
He mugged and scratched his forehead.
Well, that's the thing. I have a feeling, he trailed off, looking up at the ceiling and slowly rotating on the spot, thoughtful and quiet. Sentient viral marketing, he mused. High-grade contact delivery systems. We could be in for a spot of trouble, Donna. Donna? Will you take a look at this? He heard her exclaim. She was no longer beside him. He turned in a swirl of coat fence and hurried out of the bedroom. Donna was standing in the lounge diner. Cream modular seating surrounded a black onyx coffee table on which rested a baked earth vase full of sculptural dried grasses. The carpet was corn gold and a flame effect fire flickered in the holographic grate. Soft uplighters made the walls glow like glacial ice. Beyond a row of chrome bar stools and a polished granite breakfast bar, the brushed aluminium of the kitchen space's food replicators gleamed under halogen spotlights. Is this tasteful or what? She asked, her voice husky, her head nodding solemnly. It's so completely Sarah Beany. Oh my God, look at the drapes. It's like a show home or something. It is a show home, replied the doctor quietly. Is it? She asked. Well, no, he said. He walked over to the breakfast bar. A basket of fruit sat on the polished granite. He picked up a card perched on the top of the fruit, opened it, and read it. Just take a look at this view, Donna cried. The doctor joined her at the window. I mean, what a view, Donna exclaimed. I've never seen anything like it. I have, replied the doctor softly. And so have you. The sun flaming red and gold across white mountain peaks and crystal valleys. I don't think so, said Donna. And down there? He asked, pointing. What? Down there. Where down there? She asked. There down there, he snapped. Well, that's... Oh, my God, she said. Chiswick? He suggested. That's Chiswick, she squawked. What is Chiswick doing down there? In a crystal valley below white mountain peaks above which the sun is flaming red and gold, you mean? He asked. Yes. Well, that's the real question, the doctor replied. He opened the window latches, slid the pane aside and reached out. His fingers touched something invisible and the view, mountains and Chiswick alike, rippled like water. It's a telesensual hallucination, he said as he closed the window. A what? You're just getting me back for the plywood thing, aren't you? Said Donna. It's feeding off our thoughts, he said. It's bleeding our memories and replicating a composite view to make us both feel at home. It? Who's it? This building, the doctor said. Donna looked at him. Wait, I'm checking. Nope, I don't understand what you're saying. Neither do I, he replied with a fragile grin. It's just a hunch. How is it making us both feel at home? She asked. The doctor pointed down at Chiswick. That's you, Donna Noble, he said. He raised his hand and pointed at the mountains. And that's me. You? That's Gallifrey. Donna opened her mouth. That's what it looked like. Yes, he said. It's so beautiful. Yes, it was, he replied. It really was. So why, she began, why is it all mixed together? Because it wants us to feel comfortable here, the doctor said. But why? She asked, shaking her head in confusion. Because this is our home now, he told her. What? She asked. He showed her the card. Donna read it. She looked up at the doctor. Where did you get this? It was in the complimentary fruit basket, he replied. The card read, Welcome, new occupants of apartment 16064. Thank you for choosing an Edifice Lifehold lease. Please accept and enjoy this complimentary basket of fruit as a free and gratis gift to welcome you to the superior lifestyle enjoyment system of the Edifice. Fruit basket contents may vary.
What does this mean? Donna asked. I think it means we've become tenants, replied the doctor, whether we like it or not.
That salesman, she growled. That salesman, he agreed. I didn't sign anything. Donna cried. I swear!
I know, not deliberately.
Not deliberately? What do you mean, not deliberately? It wasn't your fault, but... The doctor started to say. But what? We can just leave, Donna insisted.
I don't think we can, said the doctor. I don't think it's going to be as easy as that.
Inside the wardrobe, the TARDIS made another unhealthy and unsatisfactory shunting noise, like freight cars clunking together. The noise died away.
Any luck?
Donna called out, checking her reflection in the mirrored door. Inside the TARDIS, the doctor shouted something back that sounded like, No! Donna paused for a moment to appreciate the soft yet crisp yield of the Egyptian cotton sheets.
You can get it working, though, can't you? She shouted.
The doctor stepped out of the wardrobe.
No, he said. I don't think I can. Something's jamming the dematerialization circuit. It must be part of the contract you signed. I never signed anything, Donna protested.
All right, I know you didn't, he said. But the sentient marketing system we encountered, it's aggressive, very aggressive. It beams out at random and it tries its sales pitch on everyone and everything it encounters. When you touch the brochure,
accidentally, Donna exclaimed, holding up an emphatic finger.
The doctor nodded. Accidentally, yeah, but accidentally was enough. It's probably written into the small print somewhere. Any physical contact constitutes a binding agreement. Donna looked horrified. But that's a scam, Donna. Pretty commonplace for pile-them-high developments like this. You touched the brochure and that activated a powerful matter transporter that snatched us here.
Kidnapped us? She asked.
The doctor pursed his lips and nodded. I wonder how many other people it's kidnapped.
But why? Donna asked.
He shrugged. Whoever built this edifice, what's it populated? It wants people living in it.
That's not an answer, she snapped.
It's part of an answer, he replied, and that's all we've got for now. I'm going to try the TARDIS one more time. Maybe if I cross-link the dematerialization circuit to the spatial displacement dampers. He disappeared into the TARDIS, continuing to mutter phrases like gravitational interloop and phased causality array. Donna wandered back into the lounge diner. She read the fruit basket card again and sighed wistfully. Then she walked back over to the window and gazed at the view, her head tilted thoughtfully to one side. There was a knock at the door. Donna froze and frowned. After a moment, the knock came again. Donna walked over to the door and peered through the spy hole. The little lens showed her a fisheye view of a long, well-lit corridor lined with identical apartment doors, each one numbered. She could half see the shape of someone very small standing directly under the spy hole. Donna opened the apartment door. A little old lady was standing outside. The little old lady was tiny, the size of a child. She was wearing a paisley housecoat and a hairnet. Only the small, twitching antennae sprouting from her forehead gave away her less-than-human origins. She smiled up at Donna.
Oh, hello, my dear. How lovely to meet you, she said. I heard someone was moving into 16064 today. So delightful to have new neighbours. I baked you a cake to welcome you.
The little old lady held up the fruitcake she was clutching in her tiny hands. Donna blinked. That's very nice of you, she said cautiously, her hand still resting on the latch.
Oh, it's the least I could do, my dear,
the little old lady declared, walking into the apartment under Donna's arm without stooping.
Shall I pop it down here?
She asked.
Why not?
Said Donna, shutting the front door.
So what's your name?
Asked the little old lady, setting the cake down beside the fruit basket. Donna, said Donna. The little old lady turned to face her.
Very pleased to meet you, Donna, she said. My name's Edie, from number 16062. Lovely apartment you've got here, very modern. Oh, I love your view.
She tottered over to the window.
Oh, yes, lovely that. I've got the Sparkash peaks in seasonal eruption, beautiful colours, but it does get a bit wearing after a while.
How long have you lived here? Asked Donna.
Let me think, replied the little old lady, thinking hard, her antennae twitching. About a week. I was very dubious when the man arrived.
The man? The salesman? Donna asked.
That's right, all teeth and fancy patter, you know the type. I was on a cruise, I'd saved up, off to see my youngest on Sagittus and meet her lovely hatchlings for the first time. They grow up so fast, don't they?
They do, Donna agreed.
And this man just showed up one day in my cabin. Dubious I was, very dubious, but it was just so charming. He had a brochure and everything, and I had been looking for a nice little retirement place. The nest gets so big when the hatchlings go, doesn't it? Oh, not that you'd know a pretty young thing like you. Don't mind me rattling on. I said to myself, Edie, I said, this looks like a properly good deal. I was all set to sign on the dotted line, but the next thing I knew I was here. Best decision I ever made.
The little old lady paused.
Not that I remember actually making the decision.
Tell me about it, Donna breathed.
Lovely place, the edifice, said the little old lady. Just lovely. So well appointed, the thought of everything.
Have they? Asked the doctor. He was standing in the bedroom doorway watching them. Everything. What about an exit?
Why would you want to leave? Asked the little old lady.
Doctor, this is Edie, said Donna. She lives at 16062. Edie, this is the doctor.
Oh, a professional man. You're a lucky girl, my dear,
said the little old lady. Ah, it's not like that, Edie, said the doctor. No, we're just friends, said Donna at the same time.
Oh, so you're like flatmates, are you? Asked the little old lady. Well, that's lovely, very modern and up-to-date. I'm a little old-fashioned, me.
Edie brought us a cake to welcome us to the edifice, Donna said. The doctor beamed.
You shouldn't have, Edie, he said.
We're all neighbours, said the little old lady. It pays to be neighbourly.
It certainly does, replied the doctor.
Any luck with the... Donna whispered. The doctor shook his head.
Having a bit of a problem, are you?
The little old lady asked.
Oh, just, the bathroom, said the doctor. Hot and cold all over the place.
The little old lady sat down on the couch.
Well, you'll be wanting to call the super then. He's the one who sorts out any problems.
The super? Asked Donna.
Runs the building, he does, said the little old lady.
And where would we find him? Asked the doctor.
Oh, there's a call button. You press a call button, the little old lady declared.
Poised, the doctor raised his eyebrows. And the call button is... The little old lady placed her fingertips against her mouth in thought and rolled her gaze up to the ceiling.
You know what? I have no idea. It must be somewhere.
It really must, agreed the doctor.
Oh, well, said the little old lady. How about some cake?
The doctor and Donna looked at each other. I'll get some plates, said Donna. There was a noise from outside in the hall. It was a heavy, shuffling noise. The doctor crossed to the front door and began to open it. The little old lady, moving far faster than she ought to have been capable of, was suddenly beside him, pushing the front door closed again firmly.
I wouldn't,
she said, looking up at the doctor.
No?
Asked the doctor. The little old lady shook her head. Outside, the heavy, shuffling noise grew louder. There was some deep, throaty growling and wet sniffing.
It's Mr. Gunner,
the little old lady whispered.
Mr. Gunner?
From number 16079.
Ah, said the doctor.
Everyone on this floor has learned to keep out of his way when he goes wandering about, the little old lady added.
She gave the doctor a conspiratorial nod.
He's not an ideal neighbour.
The doctor looked through the front door's spy hole and recoiled. I see what you mean. He's a big chap, isn't he? Let me see, Donna said, coming over with the plates in her hands.
Oh, you don't want to, the doctor replied.
I do.
You actually don't, said the doctor.
Why? Asked Donna. The snuffling and growling became more urgent. Something hard and very sharp scratched against the door, something that sounded like huge talons. Donna went pale.
Trust me, whispered the doctor.
I've no idea how somebody like Mr. Gunner came to be living on our floor, said the little old lady quietly, slicing the fruitcake. His lifestyle is a little at odds with the other residents.
How do you mean? Asked Donna.
He tends to eat them, replied the little old lady mildly.
What are we doing? Asked Donna.
We're exploring, the doctor replied. Smile, it'll be fun.
Once Mr. Gunner had gone, they had escorted the little old lady back to her apartment. Donna had been rather alarmed at the size and depth of the claw marks on the outside of their front door.
What was it? She asked.
The doctor shrugged. I only got a glimpse. Maybe a Gargon, Megaraptor or a hybrid draconian Warsaurus. I don't know what those things are, Donna said.
No reason you should, the doctor replied. Either way, big sharp pointy teeth and claws like bananas. Well, how does something like that end up signing a tenancy agreement? Asked Donna.
Probably took a swing at the salesman, said the doctor.
A mistake, then? The doctor shook his head.
I don't think it matters. I think the owners of this place want to press gang every resident they can get.
Even if it's a draconian what's it war thingamy? She asked.
I don't think they're picky, said the doctor.
There goes the neighbourhood, grumbled Donna. She followed him down the hallway. The lighting was soft and the floor carpeted. The hallway, with its rows of identical numbered apartment doors, seemed to stretch away forever. Have you any idea who they are? Donna asked.
No, said the doctor. That's why we're exploring.
This hallway's weird, Donna said. It is, isn't it? Replied the doctor. There was no apparent curve to it, but the hallway and the rows of identical doors seemed somehow to be curving away all the same. It seemed to curve away endlessly. Donna felt disconcerted. The perspective was making her slightly nauseous.
Nothing's this big, she said.
It's relative, said the doctor. You've seen the TARDIS.
And?
I think we're inside a structure that is exhibiting almost infinite relative geometry, said the doctor. I think this building's been warped.
Warped? Asked Donna.
You know, dimensionally folded in on itself to maximise usable space. Donna shook her head. The doctor stopped and turned to face her. Have you ever seen one of Morris Escher's engravings?
No.
The steps that go up and up and join up and... Oh, the steps! She nodded. The picture of the steps that go up and up and round and come back to where they started. Yeah, I've seen that.
Well, Donna Noble, you're standing in it.
No, she growled.
Kind of, the doctor replied.
A teensy bit. The structural physics are a bit more complex than that, but essentially...
No,
he looked at her steadily.
No,
she repeated. The doctor nodded and turned. Dimensionally folded. Quantum symmetry. Quite brilliant, actually. There can't be many architects capable of designing a structure like this, let alone have the resources to build it. But, said Donna, but if we keep going, won't we meet ourselves coming back the way we've come? The doctor puffed out a breath.
I hope not. That would just be embarrassing.
There are probably symmetry inhibitors working to stop that happening. That's what I would have installed if I'd built this. Donna looked at him.
Really?
The doctor nodded enthusiastically.
Oh, yes. Symmetry inhibitors. Quantum insulators in the wall cavities. Causality buffers. Paradox inverters on every deck, of course. And maybe some tiling with a dado rail just to soften the verticals. Something rustic. Terracotta.
OK, then, she said.
Mind you, I wouldn't have put a stairwell here, said the doctor.
A stairwell? She asked. The doctor squeaked the stairwell door open.
Coming?
He asked her. For the second time that day, Donna found herself holding very tightly to a handrail.
Oh,
she said. Then she added, oof, for good measure.
The warped geometry is rather more obvious in the stairwell, isn't it? The doctor called out cheerfully.
He was hurrying down the steps in front of her, his voice echoing up the shaft of the stairwell.
Kind of, she agreed.
She looked up and down, though neither direction appeared entirely reliable. The stairs seemed to ascend behind her and descend in front of her forever, yet both directions also seemed quite capable of doing the reverse without warning and, impossibly, meeting up somewhere. For the first and, Donna hoped, only time in her life, she felt seriously in danger of falling sideways. Her sense of balance was all over the place. She gripped the inner rail of the stairs with both hands and attempted to take a step down.
I have to say, said the doctor, coming to a halt below her and surveying the architecture with a respectful shake of his head, it's a bit of a marvel, isn't it? I mean, leaving aside the kidnapping and the hijacking and all the other stuff, it's a little bit wonderful, don't you think?
He turned and looked back up at Donna. The childlike grin of delight on his face rapidly dissolved into a frown of genuine concern.
Ah, you're not enjoying it, are you? He asked.
I've had better moments, Donna replied, swallowing hard, on roller coasters, and they were moving. The doctor bounded up the stairs two at a time to join her.
Careful, she cried. You might fall.
Fall? She peeled one of her hands off the rail gingerly and pointed vaguely off to one side.
That way, she explained.
Sideways? He asked. But I couldn't. That's not down.
So which way is down, Doctor? She asked, hoarsely.
None of them, he said. There is no down or up. Well, there is, but they're all down and up.
Making me feel a little queasy, said Donna, swallowing hard.
The doctor stood on the step beside her and placed a reassuring hand on her arm. Donna, he said solemnly, looking into her eyes, you're perfectly safe. You can't fall. I wouldn't let you fall. But you can't fall anyway. The dimensional folding is messing up your proprioception.
Oh, is that all? She gulped.
Yeah, that's all, he assured her. Your proprioceptive sense is governed by sensory neurons in your inner ear. It moderates concepts of motion and orientation. What you're seeing isn't matching what your inner ear is telling you, and that's making things all, she asked.
Floopy, he said.
Is that a technical term? She asked.
Absolutely, he said, grinning.
He took out his sonic screwdriver, calibrated it carefully, and held it towards her right ear.
May I?
He asked. Teeth gritted. She nodded. She heard a little pulse of sound. The impossibility of the view did not change, but she suddenly felt a great deal less alarmed by it.
Better?
He asked.
Yeah. Less floopy.
Thanks, she replied. It'll continue to improve, he added. Just take it nice and slow, shall we?
Which way do we go? Donna asked.
Oh, down, I think, he replied. She made a face. The doctor bared his teeth.
I know, he agreed. That kind of flies in the face of everything I just said, doesn't it?
He hurried off down the stairs ahead of her. Donna followed, though she still held onto the handrail with both hands.
What are we looking for? She called out. Clues, he cried back enthusiastically. Anything, everything. A call button, maybe?
He was already two turns of the stairs ahead of her. He came to a sudden halt.
Oh, now that's interesting, he declared. What? What is?
Donna caught up with him. He was kneeling on a landing turn, peering between the stair rails at the dull mustard-coloured wall of the stairwell itself.
Look, he said.
She looked. He'd discovered a brown stain, a discoloured patch on the wall like a watermark. Donna peered over his shoulder and saw that the stain spread down below their level and got darker and thicker the lower down it stretched.
A stain, she said. You found a stain.
Yes, he replied, fascinated by it.
You found a stain on the wall of a stairwell, Donna said evenly. My, my, that is completely unique in all of time and space.
He seemed impervious to her sarcasm.
So what is it? She asked.
Not sure, he replied. He stretched out his hand and touched the mark and then sniffed the tips of his fingers. Then he licked the tips of his fingers. He grimaced.
Serves you right, said Donna.
The doctor replied, sticking out his tongue.
So, Sherlock? She asked, witheringly.
I know what that is, he murmured. I just can't quite bring it to mind. I've seen it before, I'm sure. Salt, metals,
a hint of amino acids.
He started to press on down the stairs.
You see, it gets darker and wider lower down, as if it's spreading up from below.
Except that it's not below, is it? Corrected Donna.
Well, there is that, of course, he conceded.
Doctor, what? He asked.
Someone's coming.
They waited in a doorway. The door was marked L156. Someone was coming down the stairs above them. The someone was whistling cheerfully. Donna heard yapping and the skitter of tiny paws. A man came into view. He was tall and slender and decidedly not human. His clothes were fluorescent and oddly tailored, and his skin was the colour of pewter. He was walking a tiny rat thing on a lead. The rat thing scampered down the stairs ahead of him, making little yapping sounds. It had pink pom-poms for ears. The man waited on the landing while the rat thing did its business and then scooped up the pellets in a plastic bag. The doctor cleared his throat. The man turned, noticing them.
Morning,
he called in a curious nasal voice.
Morning,
the doctor replied. The little rat thing pulled on its lead, yapping and sniffing at the doctor and Donna.
"Down, Zuzu," the man commanded. "Don't mind Zuzu," he told them. "Zuzu does like his exercise, don't you, boy? I have to walk him every day."
"You live here?" asked the doctor. The man looked at them strangely and said,
"Of course, we all live here." "We certainly do," said the doctor. "I'm on 165, the man said.
"You?"
160.
"Well, then, I pass your floor every day with Zuzu," said the man cheerfully. 5-10 floors every day usually does the trick. Can't have Zuzu getting all flabby now, can we, Zuzu?"
"I don't think there's much danger of that," muttered Donna, glowering in revulsion at the scrawny little rat thing. It yapped at her, its pom-poms bouncing.
165, asked the doctor. "You must be near the top, then."
The man laughed. The laugh seemed to come out of his nose flatulently.
"The top? Nothing like. When we first moved in, we used to walk up each day, but after 170, the floors are largely empty, so Zuzu and I started coming down instead to where it was more inhabited, so we could say hello to people, you know."
The doctor nodded.
"Now I hear,"
the man said, pointing a long four-knuckled index finger upwards.
"It's filling up past 175. Can you believe that? So many people moving in every day."
"Past 175? You said past 175. It goes on further than that," asked the doctor. The man looked at him.
"You stand on the landing at 175, he said, "and you look up. The floors go on forever."
He paused.
"You haven't been here long, have you?"
"No," said Donna.
"Well," said the man in a friendly tone, "you and your husband, you've made a great choice taking a life hold here. The edifice is just fantastic. So lively, so cosmopolitan, such a cross-section."
He's not my husband, actually," Donna pointed out. The man didn't seem especially concerned.
"Zuzu loves it here," he told them.
"Have you ever seen the super?"
asked the doctor. The man frowned.
"No, but there's a call button."
"Where?" the doctor asked. The man thought about that.
"I have no idea," he said. "Well, nice meeting you. Come along, Zuzu."
The man turned and dragged his reluctant pet back up the stairs. The rat thing yapped at Donna one last time. She stuck her tongue out at it.
"One last thing," the man called, turning back to peer down at them.
"Yes," said the doctor.
"Just a word of advice. Avoid 139.
139? Why?" the doctor asked. The man shrugged.
"Never been that far down myself, but I've heard things. Bad element on 139, very bad. Just so you know."
With that, he turned and made his way back up the impossible stairs, the rat thing yapping after him, pom-poms bobbling. Donna began. "He just seemed to take it all in his stride, as if nothing was wrong." "A willing tenant, I should imagine," the doctor said. "Some of the residents brought here must be quite happy about it. Edie was. Maybe they don't really understand what they've bought into."
"Unlike us, you mean?" she suggested. He smiled at her.
"Well, we don't understand it either, but at least we know there's something we don't understand."
"And that makes it better?" Donna asked.
"Infinitely," replied the doctor with conviction.
They descended a few more floors, if descended was the right word. Donna became a little more settled with the impossible structure of the stairs, although she still didn't like it very much. Every now and then, an odd sound echoed through the stairwell walls. A cry, a plaintive wail, a burst of laughter or shouting, as well as other noises too alien for Donna to identify.
"Calicom plainsong," remarked the doctor at one point. They could both hear singing. "There are Calicom living here."
"Is that strange?" Donna asked.
"I've never known any Calicom to leave their hermetic homeworld," the doctor replied, his head cocked to one side as he listened to the fading melody. "That's a lament of regret and sufferance. The Calicom don't want to be here. They must have been tricked into it too."
He held up his hand abruptly and Donna came to a halt. The doctor gestured downwards. Below them, through the turns of the stairway flights, Donna could see a glow of lights wobbling and flickering as they ascended. "What is it?" she whispered. They ducked into cover in the nearest of the stairwell's doorways and waited. They heard soft footsteps approaching and saw the elevating glow of handheld torches bobbing closer. A party of figures came into view, slowly toiling up the stairwell, carrying guttering brushlights. There were 20 of them, and they were all dirty and thin, their clothing ragged. They were all aliens, several different breeds and species commingled. They advanced up the stairs and came to a halt when they saw the Doctor and Donna. Donna had never seen so many curious alien life forms together in one place before. Toad things, fox-like mammalians, beings with dirty but iridescent skins, scaled creatures. She felt alarmed until she realized that she understood the expression on all their faces. It was fear.
"Morning," said the Doctor.
The aliens muttered to one another.
"Who art thou?"
lisped the toad thing at the head of the party.
"Just residents, like you," the Doctor said.
"We are not residents," barked a fox mammal.
"No?"
The toad thing shook its head so hard it made its baggy cheeks flap and flubber.
"We are prisoners. We are refugees. We flee the depths," said one of the iridescent beings.
"Is it so bad down there?" the Doctor asked.
"It is hell down there," replied the toad thing. "We hunt for the light," said the iridescent.
"To escape the war zones," growled the fox mammal.
"War zones?" asked Donna quietly, hoping she'd misheard.
"The Baracta and the Chavone," said the iridescent.
"The Cork and the Lom," said a scaled thing.
"The Rutan and the Sontarans," barked the fox mammal. "All the bad neighbours," agreed the toad thing.
"Well, they'd all be very bad neighbours," agreed the Doctor, looking slightly pale. "The species you've mentioned, they're all living down there."
"All of them and others besides," the toad thing lisped emphatically.
"We climb each day hoping to find a way out of this edifice," said the iridescent. "But the more we climb, the more edifice we find. It is never ending."
"Sometimes we find a level we think will be safe,"
the scaled thing said, its voice like a wet finger on glass.
"But there is always danger, dispute, death."
"We were 200 when we set out," said the fox mammal.
"How long have you been climbing?" Donna asked. The aliens glanced at one another and muttered. The toad thing looked back at Donna.
2 years, it said.
2 years? The Doctor said, exhaling, his eyes wide. 2 years?
"Since we were brought here," replied the toad thing.
The fox mammal took a step forwards.
"What are you, pink flesh things? What are you?"
"Well, I'm the Doctor and this is Donna," the Doctor said pleasantly. "Do you have names?"
"Only for each other,"
said the scaled thing.
"We have learned to trust only each other."
"Well, that's very wise," the Doctor replied. "Smart thinking, good, well done." "Yes, because everything else we meet tries to kill us," said the toad thing. "Which is why we have made ourselves ready," added the iridescent.
"Doctor," Donna hissed. The aliens were moving towards them slowly and threateningly. They had produced primitive makeshift weapons from under their ragged clothes, rock knives, cudgels, short, knobbly spears.
"Now look," said the Doctor. "There's no need for that. We're all friends."
"Doctor!"
Donna screeched. The alien refugees rushed them. Donna squealed and tried to open the door behind them. The door was marked L141. It wouldn't budge.
Doctor! She wailed.
The doctor aimed his sonic screwdriver at the latch and the door banged open. They burst through it, voices barking and lisping at their tails. The doctor slammed the door and sonicked the latch to lock. Alien fists beat and hammered on the other side.
Close, breathed Donna.
Too close, the doctor agreed, plucking out the makeshift javelin that had impaled the shoulder padding of his coat.
So sad, he murmured,
tossing the javelin aside and picking at the hole in his coat.